We left off with the devastating destruction caused to the Blandin Paper Company when the dam burst, carrying with it buildings and machinery and its huge reservoir of logs. But Blandin decided to do everything possible to get the mill back into production and called for immediate work to begin in a cofferdam. That's a temporary dam. And that would be to hold water back to form a reservoir for use in the paper mill, and at the same time to hold back that water so work could begin immediately on a new permanent dam. Quickly, the cofferdam was erected, and the Pokegama dam tender just upriver was told to prepare to open the gates. He very nervously wondered, could they possibly have built a structure strong enough to hold all this water? Could it possibly be done so quickly? And the order indeed came to him. He was to allow 2,000 cubic feet per second to pass through those gates and to head back downriver again. Well, as the reservoir filled, the mill prepared to resume production. But leaks appeared as the water rose, and the work crews feverishly placed some 5,000 sandbags and added many tons of rock, hay, and cinders to the dam crib. During the night of September 15th, they carefully watched the dam as the water level rose, plugging leaks as they appeared. In the early morning hours of September 16th, the government dam tender's nervousness was justified. Water poured through the cofferdam in too many places to stop, and the workers evacuated. In the mill, the men hurriedly pulled pocket grinders from their pits, and at 6:45 a.m., a large segment of the cofferdam burst, the huge timbers that comprised its crib splintering and breaking. Again, a deluge of water foamed and boiled through a devastated dam, and again, a mass of pulp logs surged downstream. This time, the Pokegama dam tender was alert and ready, and just 15 minutes after the break, the government dam gates were closed. Plans to reopen the mill were canceled while preparation to build new cofferdam were made. This time, steel sheet piling was driven to reinforce rock-filled timber cribbing. At the same time, pumps were installed to carry enough water to the mill to allow the resumption of operations. So the number one machine started up 20 days after the initial break, and the number three machine followed suit several days after that. Once again, good weather mitigated the damages. Very little rain fell, and the new cofferdam was quickly erected. Water was released at the Pokegama Dam with full discharge beginning on October 2nd, so that would be just a month after the initial break. Pokegama Lake began to drop, and the unusually dry fall continued, allowing easy dispersal of the stored water. In October and December, construction of the new permanent dam proceeded, but the river was not ready to concede. Ice heavings within the crib of the new cofferdam caused serious leaks. Late on Christmas night, sharp blasts of the mill whistle reverberated through Grand Rapids. Mill workers hurriedly answered the summons, fearful of what it implied. The dam was intact, but a large leak had to be stopped. Sandbagging began at once. By 4 o'clock a.m., the flow halted and the workers returned home, only to be summoned again when the whistle sounded at 7 o'clock that morning. They returned, this time to watch in discouragement, as a large section of the top part of the dam gave way, and a flood of water, this time carrying big chunks of ice, poured through. Some machinery was swept away, and a watchman checking equipment in the pump house found himself stranded in the rising waters. He managed to kick his way out to the roof, and there he stood, flopping arms and stomping feet, trying to keep warm, even while in danger of being carried off in the flood. After several efforts, he was rescued. Despite much damage, none of the breaks had resulted in either a loss of life or serious injury. The third break was not as severe as the others, and most of the dam held. The Army engineers agreed to keep the Pokegama Dam closed for up to 2 weeks, provided the paper company assumed responsibility for damage to lakeshore property from rising waters or ice breakage. The water in the reservoir soon dropped to the level of the break in the cofferdam, and work hastened on the permanent dam, A horde of men worked in shifts around the clock in mild January temperatures and poured vast quantities of steam-heated concrete. The mill remained in operation, and all appeared to be returning to normal by mid-month as dam work proceeded and normal flowage was again released at the government dam. Months of chaos had neither broken employee morale nor for very long halted the production of the Blandon Paper Company. The writer of a column in the Broke Pile reflected general mill sentiment. They say there's nothing like a little excitement to break the monotony. Well, they can leave my part of it out. It wasn't so bad when the dam went out twice, but three times in one fall is too many for me. The loss of two dams and the partial collapse of a third, with all attendant disruption and destruction, was a serious blow to the Blandon Paper Company. The permanent dam was not completed until the fall of 1949, and then only after a number of setbacks and expensive delays. In the Broke Pile in November of 1949, Blandon wrote that the most modern methods of engineering and construction had been used in building the new dam. It included an expense of $80,000 for a newly developed method of strengthening the concrete. Blandon believed the new dam would hold even the most obstreperous waters for the next 100 years. And you know, that's only 30 years away at this point. I assume that people at the mill are keeping a close eye on that new dam. Blandon stated that the third break had been almost enough to put everybody down for the final knockout. That was a close call, almost the loss of the paper company. Insurance coverage that protected just about every other part of the mill had not been practical for the dam, and thus the paper company bore all expenses incurred by the breaks. The cost of the construction, replaced machinery, and erection of the dams amounted to $1,200,000. Huge loss for that company that had just suffered through the Depression and had been so long without adequate profits. But looking for a bright side, Blandon pointed out that a new filtering system installed as part of the project would provide a still brighter sheet for the magazine publishers. New and rebuilt generating equipment was installed, and reliance on hydraulic power to operate pocket grinders was eliminated. But most of the work was simple restoration that brought little new advantage to the mill. Plans for large-scale improvements were temporarily set aside. Fortunately, Blandon's policy of reinvesting profits in the mill once again proved the financial strength of the paper company. The high prices realized from groundwood magazine paper in the late 1940s also helped, and the company weathered the crisis. Blandon concluded, "In the interest of all concerned looking to the future, let us hope that there will be no more Black Fridays." It was a Friday when the mill originally broke. "That there will be no more Black Fridays, either in Grand Rapids or in this part of the state." Though Blandon had pulled it off again through large expenditures, he'd kept full employment, kept the mill going, and had saved the situation on behalf of Grand Rapids. The in-house publication, The Broke Pile, had started as just mimeographed pages put together by mill employees, carrying the lighter side of mill news, sports scores, the bowling teams, and so on. Various little stories and jokes of what had been observed in the plant. But on its pages, Blandon first offered holiday good wishes under the heading, "A Special Christmas Message from Our President and Friend, Mr. C.K. Blandon." After the war, he became a frequent contributor, his articles and essays appearing on Mr. Blandon's page. For a time, Blandon's writings were about the only serious feature in the Broke Pile. Gradually realizing the opportunity presented by the publication to reach all company employees, other management personnel also began to contribute. Andrews and Shacker occasionally wrote for it, and some of the technical staff explained aspects of their work. But Blandon continued to lead the way, and his writings were ever more regularly featured, sometimes taking two or three pages of the Broke Pile. At the same time, the publication expanded, adopting a magazine format. Mimeograph sheets gave way to pages including pictures printed on higher quality Blandon paper. Let's take a look at some of Blandin's writings from the late 1940s in the Baroque file and get an idea of some of the things and matters he was thinking about. He wrote, "It may be said here that with its many responsibilities, personal ownership is ceasing to be attractive. Labor troubles, financing, capital risks, and ever-increasing taxes are causing many at the head of important businesses to wonder whether the job is really worthwhile." And his company did indeed share those thoughts with many others. Blandin says, "Through all the years, America has had a small standing armed force. Military heads are trained to fight, so are bulldogs. They like it. Since 1776 and ever since, minutemen in this country have responded quickly when called. Let's not overdo with too much military. It's expensive and dangerous." And he says, "Communism seems to have raised an ugly head in this country. The communist joins the unions to gain influence for his foreign-controlled power, does all the boring work, edges into executive circles, becomes a head because the mass of workers or those of them who vote associate him with union activities and assume he will fight harder in their behalf than the less aggressive candidates. If union members who are loyal Americans keep the Russian-minded away from their ranks, there need be no difficulty so serious that management and honest Americans cannot settle the differences between themselves." Never a problem for Blandin to come up with some of his anti-union sentiments. And he writes, "No doubt the Grand Rapids High School Band has been an influence in keeping peace and harmony in the home life of this community. Seldom do we hear of factional difficulties to worry the townspeople. There must be harmony if you would have music. Perhaps this influence is far-reaching and beneficial in its effects on the lives and the stability of school graduates and the folks in this community." And on a larger scale again, in comments that perhaps would have been more suited to his St. Paul Newspaper Day journalist, it is alleged that many editorial writers today do not have the ability or the time to give proper research and thought to editorials in which they try to present their views to the public. An example of what may be regarded as a first-class editorial page is one that has carefully written articles that occasion thought, time, and research before the writer attempted to set his ideas before the public. And in programs to come, we'll look at some more of Blandin's writings in the Baroque pile.